Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast.
Hey, everybody, Mark and Steve on the PBSC podcast.
Hello.
This is episode 226. And the title, How Can I Share My Authentic Feelings When My Addict Partner Reacts with Depression, Anxiety, and Shame? I guess we could say there and or shame, because it could be one of those or all of those.
Yeah.
And/or shame.
The variety pack of maladies as a result of all this.
Yes. Variety pack. And this this comes from a submission by a partner who's really trying hard. We could feel the sincerity of her efforts. And she does love and appreciate her addict partner who's trying to be in recovery. She reaches out to us and says, hello, I just recently started listening to your podcast. And I was wondering if you have, or if you could talk about how to approach communicating our authentic feelings when our porn addict partner also struggles with depression, for example. She says, I'm always too scared to be fully transparent with him about what I'm feeling because I worry I will make him spiral to a very dark place. I know we won't be able to fully heal and mend our relationship until I'm able to be fully honest with him. For a little context, he's not currently in therapy. I have told him that therapy with a CSAT is one of the things I need him to do to help me feel safe, and that I think it will help him in all areas of his life, not just in recovery. So that's a great submission. And I both of us so related to this because, of course, as so often happens here in PBSC, that we have a partner, especially when partners will submit something about, you know, a partner in betrayal trauma will submit something about her partner who's an addict. We so often will go, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And of course, when addicts write in, we so relate to all of you. I especially related to this submission because I'll tell you, this is where my wife and I were for a really long time. And not just my wife, I would say a fair number of people in my life were in the place of this partner. I often have shared here, you know, pretty raw and real. I come from a family of origin that suffers from enormous mental illness. It runs in our family big time. Both sets of my grandparents were alcoholics, addicts. Several of them were sex addicts. And this was back way in the old days. Depression, anxiety, Tourette's syndrome, bipolar, ADHD, you name it. The grab bag of mental illness disorders runs in my family dominantly obsessive compulsive disorder, all of them. And I like to say that I inherited the genetic grab bag. So I was born into that environment where there were incredibly mentally ill people trying to act like adults and raise me as a kid. And so I got the brunt of all of their dysfunction. And I discovered over time that I had a lot of that dysfunction built into me, into my genetic code. So it was kind of the perfect storm. And so just about everything that my clients bring to me in my therapy, stuff comes to us to PBSC and D2C. I'm like, yeah, I've experienced that. So yeah. I could really relate to this. And people walked on eggshells around me because they didn't know which mark was going to show up. They didn't know who they were going to get. They didn't know if they were going to make it worse. You know, I could spiral out of control with the snap of a finger. And we'll talk about in a minute. Part of that became, well, it had very legitimate origins and legitimate development over time. My survival self learned in some ways to kind of play it to my advantage, tell you the truth.
So yeah.
We can talk a little bit about that today.
Well, we know a lot of spouses find themselves kind of, for lack of a better term, sort of held hostage by this dynamic.
Yes, a good way to say it.
Where they, you know, I have these things that I need to share. I want to share. I'm not, you know, I'm couching all of my statements with him, or sometimes not saying things at all because I don't want to see the reaction. Right. And in my case, I'm very similar to Mark, but I too would very much go to this hopeless shutdown place, but that was intermingled with probably that was 40% of that. 60% was the other side of aggression and all over the place. Right. So I think every partner can probably connect with this idea of whether it's completely shutting down, falling into deep depression, possibly even suicidal, or on the other side of extreme aggression, right? Defensiveness, egotism coming out, right? Whatever the case may be.
Or if I get raw and real and honest and finally try to speak my truth and be authentic with him, I know, even though he tries to hide it, he's just disappeared into a gigantic addiction binge.
Sure.
Yeah.
So there's, right. So there's this constant, like, I need to be me. I need to be my true self. But if I do, here's the fallout. And what do I do?
Yeah. If I be me, I'm going to pay.
Yeah.
And so partners have a survival brain too, not just addict. We don't have an exclusive corner on the survival brain, you know, side of things. Partners have that as well. And they know their brain goes into places where it's just not safe to speak up, to speak out, to be authentic, to be genuine. So I'm going to go into my own hunker down and coping mode.
Yeah. Yep. Everybody in the marriage is just trying to get through the day, so to speak, for different reasons. And, we're going to kind of approach this in two ways. So jump with us here, if you will, on the journey here as we rapidly move through what could easily be a much deeper discussion and frequently is on our program like Dare to Connect for addict spouses and couples. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But today we're going to kind of glance over a few things. But let's talk about from the addict side, I guess, you know, what's going on. Mark, in our notes here today, kind of termed this, you know, what is that reactive mode about? And it's a great way to put it because it definitely is reactive for sure.
Yeah.
And for many of us, this did begin in childhood, right? Why do we exhibit these juvenile? And because they are, and I don't say that in a denigrating way. It just truly is what it is. These juvenile, or more childish approaches to addressing issues. Why do these manifest this way? Why does this happen in adulthood? Why is this man that I am married to who has a job and is productive and, you know, a father and in many areas of society, like he's high functioning, he's doing all these things, but then on these certain selective issues, I will confront him about it and I get a better response from like my toddler. Like, yeah. Why does that happen?
Why does that happen?
And there are real reasons, right? And a lot of that does start in childhood. The first thing is that many of us, and Mark kind of categorized this, I know this is very much how it was for him. Many of us found ourselves growing up in households where for one reason or another, it was not safe to be authentic.
Mm-mm.
It wasn't safe because being authentic or being open, being vulnerable, really, being vulnerable was met with negativity. Sometimes that came in the form of punishment. Sometimes it came in the form of just downright abuse. Maybe it led to neglect. Or a host of other things, maybe being shamed, right? But many of us learned really quick early on that it is that being your true self even around people that are close to you, is not the way to go.
Yep.
That's not the way to have your needs met.
Well, and so what did we learn? And here's the great paradox of this, because I, like today, my mom is, she's elderly today, and she put me through a lot of crap for a lot of years as a kid. But I have to tell you, today, my mom's one of my greatest heroes, because what have I come to know? As I've come to understand my own origins, my own addiction and recovery and mental illness and learning how to be healthy and live healthy, I realized that when I was a kid, I was looking to her to find safety in an adult that herself was not safe.
Yeah.
She had learned that she had to defend and take care of herself at all costs in order to just get by in life. And that's all she had, was enough to just defend herself. And
yes.
I was looking to this adult to give me things she was not able to give.
Yeah.
I realized that I've had a lot more compassion for her. And now I realize that because she was like that, many of the adults around me were isolated and, you know, self-protecting, self-serving, self-defending. I then, as a kid, found that I needed to go into the same mode in order for me to now be safe. So where do we end up? Going it alone, because the people around us can't be there.
Well, and I love the way you're saying that, man, because I mean, what it really boils down to is this world of survival is what's taught, rather than a world of emotional thriving. It's a world of emotional surviving.
Yeah.
And
you're like, well, that person's just surviving. So they got nothing left for me. What am I going to do now? Oh, I'm going to survive.
Yes. A world where we thrive is one in which we self-advocate. And we're going to talk about self-advocating here in a second. But a world in which we survive is where we're constantly on the reaction side of things, where we're reacting to stimuli around us rather than being free agents and operating on we're forces that are acted upon rather than forces that are doing the acting.
Exactly.
And so we find ourselves constantly moving from crisis to crisis. And when we start to, and that mentality becomes more complicated, because as we start to engage in other dysfunctional behaviors like addiction, in order to compensate for that, right, as a reactionary way of medicating or numbing out, what does that do? It introduces more consequences. It introduces more negative elements. It introduces more shame, more guilt, more of the emotional turmoil that we were experiencing before, which pushes us deeper and deeper into a survival place without some sort of intervention.
And ends up disconnecting us from people around us even more.
Yes.
Now, people hearing this will say, well, if you guys understand all of this, why don't you just stop doing it? Right? Just break out of it. What's okay? You're showing some awareness here, but really?
We've heard this from so many spouses. Why don't you just?
Yeah.
There was a really great Saturday Night Live bit years ago that was done that talks about that, kind of goes through this, and the scenario is basically a woman comes into a therapist's office, and the whole thing is about just stop it.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. The guy says, I only bill by the minute, because my solution is so
quick
and ironclad. And the woman shows up and starts pouring out his heart, and he puts up his, he says, whoa, whoa, whoa. He says, just stop.
Yeah.
That's it.
And she tries to get into the reasons behind it. And she tries, and everybody in the audience laughs, of course, because every time she says, well, this is what's going on, he says, no, we don't go there. And then she'll say something else. He's like, we definitely don't go there. Right. And he says, you just need to stop.
And
obviously that's the joke, right? Because we can't stop.
I wrote that down in our notes here. I said, so what, why is it that we don't quote just stop? And there's a really powerful neuroscience behind this. Once the survival brain, from the time we're small, once it, and I do put it in quotes, because it is kind of its own entity, so to speak. Once it learns what it needs to do to survive in crazy circumstances and unsafe circumstances, and with people who have their own issues all around us, once it figures out how to do that, it doesn't want to be interrupted in that process. Yes. Why? Because it is sure And I, when I say sure, I mean sure. It is sure that it knows what works. And this is why addiction is so hard. This is why we get into so many of our negative habits that become problematic in our relationships. There's this, the survival part of us learned well what it needed to do to stay safe, and you can't talk it out of it today. Mm. It resists.
Yes.
No way. Absolutely. I know what works.
Yeah, it's a really twisted and very dark cycle. And unfortunately, spouses who find themselves married to someone like this find themselves along for that ride. Right. Now, there's obviously more to this than that, but we're keeping it simple here because we got to press on. But as far as the addiction side goes, before we shift gears, you know, where is a starting point for those addicts out there who struggle with this, right? Because I think every guy that Mark and I have worked with over the years, and that has been a lot of guys in some form or fashion, to some degree, struggles with this, right? How do I break out of this pattern of just reacting to stuff around me in a dysfunctional, inauthentic, escapist way? And how do I start turning this around in a way that involves actually figuring out it, life on life's terms, and actually involves, you know, addressing issues as they come
or what? And let's say something really important where initial recovery, trying to repair a relationship, becomes so frustrating and confusing and hopeless for both partners is we as addicts, for example, will try to start to do some of these things, but we don't know how. We haven't developed the skills. The adults early on abandoned us with teaching and mentoring us in connection and intimacy and authenticity. So no one ever taught us, and a part of us just cleared that off to the side and said, that will never be the answer for me. So I'm going to go get all these isolation skills. Now we get into a relationship and we're suddenly supposed to show up and know how to connect and how to be intimate. And we don't.
Yeah.
It goes bad. What do? We compensate with self-protection, deflection, resistance, manipulation. We don't know how to do this. Yep. And we think, I must be the most ridiculous, you know, pathetic, dumb loser in the world because this ain't working.
Yes.
But we don't know how. So we have to start taking those first steps, right?
Totally. Well, and what does that look like, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it looks like a lot of things. And again, we don't have the time that we would like on our and I Kind of Dare to Connect session to cover this in detail, but you need to start advocating for you, and that can take a lot of forms. Mm. That, for example, starts by practicing mindfulness. And Dare to Connect, you know, we just did an entire month long vignette, if you will, right? We take topics and address them in roughly a monthly fashion, in addition to all the other content that we do there on the live sessions. And we just did an entire vignette on the three dimensions of mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
right? Figuring out, what am I feeling? How does that connect, you know, with my needs, and how do I share those and relay those to others in relationships around me? We need to start advocating for ourselves and developing out the mindfulness to recognize even what those needs are. Because as long as we are simply just in a survival place, the brain, it's almost impossible for the brain to look at itself and say, well, what do I really need for long-term success if it's just trying to get through today? Yeah, if I'm just trying to survive, you know, the next hour, or not be, or my addiction not to be discovered by my wife for the next 24 hours, or I'm trying to, you know, not let my coworkers pick up on, you know, the issues that I'm having on the day to day, I'm never going to break out of that cycle.
Yeah. And if you even hearing the concept of you've got to start advocating for yourself, there's a part of your brain that will even resist that.
Oh, yeah.
Because what does it say? It isn't safe to advocate for yourself. Are you crazy?
Well, and I don't deserve it.
I don't deserve it. Besides that, I don't know how. And besides that, you're asking me to come out of this approach and strategy that I've been using for decades of my life. You're asking me to leave that behind. Are you insane? This works. I'm miserable and it's wrecking my relationship, but it works, right?
Yeah.
And we just encourage guys all the time. Can you get to the place where you're willing to at least just start taking the initial steps forward, just the first simple steps? And one of those, this was a big one for me, was I willing to get to the place where I could finally at least admit in part, this, my way alone, my isolated way, doesn't work. it's not producing the outcomes that I'm finding myself yearning to have in my life. This old way of doing it, it's not enough. It's not enough anymore. I want more. I feel that I deserve more. I'm starting to see that there could be more. But guys, I gave you a little bit of my mental health history, my whole family. It was like this perfect setup, I call it. And I got to where those reasons became really convenient excuses that kept me stuck. Mm. I didn't want to face all of it. It was just too overwhelming and too hard. But it's just taking those initial steps to start to advocate for yourself. And of course, one of those is, you know, get yourself over into our D2C program, get yourself into a 12-step support program, get a sponsor, right? Start doing something different. If you keep doing everything you've been doing, you're going to keep getting everything you've been getting. So what are the first steps out for you? And can you start taking those?
Yeah. No, all great points. So there's lots more to say about that, but we will press on because we are on a podcast today. Where we're going to go now as we begin to wrap up is let's talk a little bit about the partner side of this, right? Because that was the original question that came in, right? You find yourself as a partner. Mark and I, you know, we are addicts in long-term recovery. I have been sober nearly 10 years, but that is not nearly enough time to have forgotten how desperate Brittany was in this place. Because she, like many partners, tried to love me into this thing, and that did not work the way she was doing it.
Yeah.
And when I say loving me into this, I use air quotes because a lot of that was actually enablement, right? It was well-intended love, but the actions that were behind that love were enabling, not forward progressing of the relationship or of her own needs.
Yeah. So my wife tried to nurture me into healing and recovery, or patience her, you know, my way into it, or rescue me. Yeah. All of that she just did for, a couple of decades actually.
Yep. And just that is the setup. Like we actually talked about in last week's podcast, that is actually the setup to end the marriage quicker than the addiction will in the long term. Mm. But when we talk, if we're going to talk about this, we really do want you to know we get it. You partners, we know that for many of you, there's lots on the line. There's kids, there's finances. There are so many things on the line that make up that hostage situation.
Yeah.
Right. That we talked about that you find yourself in. We'll be the first to tell you, we can't sit here and look at each one of you and say, this is the right decision for you. Okay. And we can't tell you how much of what we're going to say next is going to apply to your situation because we're not in it. This is not individual therapy. This isn't even Dare to Connect. This is a podcast. But what we will say is let's really look at this for what it is. So first thing is we do get it. It is stressful. It's scary. And it may even bring about unwanted consequences. The task of sharing your true self with your partner will almost always in this business involve some sort of blowback.
Yes. Right?
Now, in order, and this is where my what I just said now applies. You, and this is a sincere question. We're not saying this in a way of like, hey, your answer to this better be do exactly what we do, because we're not living your life, right? We know everyone's situation is so different, but you really do have to sincerely ask yourself, what if I'm examining my own authenticity, since that's where this question started with this wife, right? If you examine your own authenticity, you have to ask yourself, what kind of a marriage do I want? Right? What kind of marriage do I want? Intimacy always means sharing and receiving the good and the bad from another person. Our culture sucks at teaching this, but that is nevertheless the truth. Choosing deep connection means letting go of outcomes.
Oof, you if just said something really, that's no, stop. We're ending this podcast right now. What you just said is too hard. I'm being a little facetious, but I'm also being really, my heart, that just hit my heart like, whoa. I'm going to choose deep connection, but let go of the outcomes or consequences, Steve?
Yeah.
Oof. Do you know how complicated my life is? Do you know what's on the line here, Steve? If I start speaking my truth and holding my ground with him?
Well, and that's where, again, you've got to examine your own authenticity with this, right? Because again, we're the first to tell you that that's not, you know, that road may look a little bit different for everybody here, and you may need to involve a different level of intervention, right? Depending on the circumstance, maybe you need to get a therapist involved. Dare to Connect, may we humbly suggest, is an excellent forum to, we have couples in Dare to Connect right now. For example, I have one specifically that I work with where the way that they have opened up communication on difficult issues has been through Dare to Connect, because we talk about issues in there that they, if one of them brings it up with the other, instant defensiveness, instant argument, instant escalation. But when we talk about it in the group, what it does is it gives Dare to Connect, gives them a forum where they are able to share with one another, or they're able to hear about a topic, reflect on how that topic applies to them, and then come together in a check-in and start the dialogue that way.
Yeah, we'll actually have couples who will send us these crazy hard just situations that just explode in their relationship. So they'll send them into us. We'll talk about it during one of the addict or partner or couple sessions that we do, three times a week. We'll answer it from our side. We'll give our experience in our own situations and with other couples over a couple of decades. And then they'll listen to that as a couple. They'll just both sit and listen to it. No talking. They'll just listen to us go through the whole thing. And that kind of breaks the ice and paves the way for them to have a discussion, one that they've never been able to have before.
Yep.
Pretty cool. Absolutely. How that works. Yeah.
So some really cool things happen that way, but that is the truth, ladies. And that's where you have to ask yourself, just really, what kind of marriage do I want? And I would even extend that and say, what kind of marriage do I deserve? Right. What do I want that to look like? And once you figure that out, then you allow that to lead out, right, in terms of where you go with that. I will say this, I am not a partner in this process, right? Neither is Mark, admittedly. We are addicts in this situation, so we reference from that standpoint, but we've worked with, well, between the two of us, well over thousands of partners in our time individually. And I can tell you that as an addict, I absolutely can relate to the following statement, because it applies to both the addict and the partner. Allowing the feelings of another individual to compromise your own authentic integrity is always an exchange of diminishing returns. Always.
You should say that again.
Allowing the feelings of another individual to compromise your own authentic integrity is always an exchange of diminishing returns. No matter how loving that may be, no matter how much love you may attach to giving away pieces of yourself, the cost is too high.
Yeah.
If you can't be you in a relationship, what are you?
Yeah, that's a good question. You can't be you. What are you? You know, this is where we have a lot of partners who get into our D2C program and start realizing what it means to be inauthentic.
Yes.
They realize, man, I have been behaving in ways for years that aren't me. Yeah. I'm not a rager. I'm not an out of control person. I'm actually pretty patient. I'm actually pretty kind and loving. But then here comes these scenarios and I turn into something else.
Yes.
Right? Or I used to be so outgoing and happy, and now I'm just really kind of stoic and shut down and you know, disconnected. That's not me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear that a lot.
Absolutely. So something just to be thinking of. But in terms of where to go next, to whatever degree it's authentic for you, as we wrap up here, there are some bullet points below this. The key here is going to be, you have to approach this from a place of being loving, but being direct. And that means some things. So maybe Mark and I can kind of bounce back and forth between these last bullet points as we wrap up here.
Yeah. And I love the first bullet point you put here, Steve. You said be sure to authentically share the things that he is doing well, in addition to the things that need work. Now, this might sound strange, but that feels like a risky place for a lot of partners to go.
Yes, it does.
As soon as I say share the things he's doing well, what does a partner's very legitimate learned defensiveness say?
He is going to take that and run with it and think we are good to go.
There you go. See, yep. Steve, he knew that automatic answer. I can't tell him what he's doing good. He will weaponize that immediately, take it as permission that all is forgiven and we're awesome now. So no, I can't tell him any good things. But see, that's not authentic to any of the partners I've worked with. They do see both, right? And so this is part of letting go of the consequences or outcomes in order to be authentic.
Yeah,
that's a great point.
Absolutely. So that's an important piece, right? Is including that. And the only other thing that I will say about that is I think that's because Mark addressed the fear really well. May I suggest that having worked with many, many partners over the years, it's important that you allow yourself to see those positive things too. Mm-hmm. You can only be empowered in this marriage to make changes if you are in tune with your own authenticity. And that does mean connecting with your pain in this relationship, but your trauma is going to make you want to see just that. And it's important that if you are making critical decisions about do I stay or do I go, what are my needs, where do I go going forward, that you are seeing this man in front of you for the good and the bad. Because I've worked with too many partners where those decisions are simply made from the trauma side.
Yes.
And that's very easy to do. Your trauma is yours to own. It's not something you should dismiss. It's not something you should sublimate. And I don't want anybody to take that from here. But you cannot allow it to override either. It has to operate in tandem with everybody else in the brain, in your every other voice in your brain. When it comes to the table, it needs to be a voice of caution, not somebody, as we talked about in Dare to Connect the other day, where it pulls a gun and a bomb vest and says, "You're all doing what I say." Right? It needs to operate in conjunction with everybody else there.
Yeah. So, and it's learning that balance that several realities can coexist. For the reality that there are parts of him, maybe many parts of him, that are a good man. There are other parts that are really screwed up and abusive.
And they're wounding me deeply.
Yeah, they've hurt me incredibly deeply. And I'm looking at all sides of this and trying to weigh it out from my true authenticity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and expressing that and what you appreciate and those things, if it's authentic and why you appreciate those things is absolutely critical. But then let's go to the flip side, okay? Because partners also struggle with this. It is also important, and we know this is hard, you need to be very clear about the impact his actions or inactions are having on you, right? We're talking about this partner right now that we're addressing who is needing him in order to feel safe to get into with a qualified therapist, into a CSAT, a certified sex addiction therapist, for those who have not heard that term on the podcast before. I need him to be seeing somebody like that so that he can be getting the support he needs in order to reduce my anxiety and to see him making the effort to change. To this point in time, for reasons that we don't have specified here, he is not doing that. He's not complying with that, which is his right to do, but it also at the same time absolutely is compromising her. Now, she can't own his choices, right? And it's not her job to make him do that. But it absolutely is her job to make sure he is crystal clear about the path that him making that choice not to see that therapist is taking them down.
Yeah.
Every day, every week, hon, it's important that you know, I feel a little less safe in this marriage. Every week when I express, I need you to see somebody and you don't, it's very difficult for me. We have the resources. We have the funds. We've talked about it. You keep saying you'll do it. Every time that happens, I feel a little less trusting of you because you're not keeping your word, and I feel a little less connected or fought for by you because you're not following through with my needs.
Yeah.
You need to know that. It doesn't mean I don't love you. It doesn't mean I don't care. It does mean we are getting more distant.
And she, you know, this partner wrote into us that she has a problem with doing what you just said.
I know.
Because every time she even starts to approach the line of being very clear about how his behaviors are impacting her, he immediately starts to go dark, you know, depressed, dark. She said even sort of bordering on suicidal. And so she feels shut down. I can't be clear about the impact of all of this because I have to walk on eggshells. And we're inviting her to dare to start to be authentic and to begin to release these consequences or outcomes to his side of the street, which we know is terrifying. Right? I mean, terrifying to start to look at doing that. But essential if she's not to lose herself in this whole thing till there's hardly anything left of her at all.
Absolutely. Yep. Losing those little pieces of oneself that we talked about. Right. And also, and I will speak as an addict with this because it didn't do Brittany, my wife, or I a service by her holding this back from both herself and from me. He needs to be, if he's going to be empowered to make true choices in his own recovery, he needs to know what's on the horizon from your side if this doesn't change. Because too often, by the time a couple hits my office or Mark's office, this what we're talking about right now has gone to an extreme. And one day he just wakes up and there's just a wedding ring sitting on the pillow.
Yep.
If you feel like you are leaving this marriage, if you feel like you are pulling out of this marriage, we know that's scary. He needs to know.
Yeah.
You need to recognize that for what it is so that you guys can pull up on the stick of this plane before it hits the mountain. Because just waiting and waiting and waiting means you will just hit the mountain. Right. So that needs to, you, those consequences. And again, we totally get it. We've been the guy where our partner starts saying this and we just absolutely, the clinical term would be lose our shit. We just completely lose it. Right. And we're just, we go off the rails and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't. But at the end of the day, that is a starting point, because if that's what he needs to hear to finally make a change, to begin to do what we just talked about the first half of this podcast, right? To take a step into the darkness, to make that phone call he damn well knows he needs to be making, to attend that meeting for the first time, even though it's uncomfortable, to write that bloody journal entry his therapist has told him to do for 50 weeks in a row, and he keeps finding reasons why he's just too busy, then it's worth it. Because only he can change this at the end of the day. Right. You can't change him. He has to take the steps.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, on the back of that, we encourage you to do a couple of things. Step one is to go watch some Care Bears after this, because this was kind of a hard podcast, we know, for some of you partners to listen to. We hope that it was good for you. Step two is we would lovingly encourage and implore you, not because we are businessmen first, although we are, and we do like to, you know, feed our families and provide a living, but more so because as addicts in recovery, we would implore all of you listening, if you have not tried the Dare to Connect program, please come give it a try. We have a 2-week free trial for that right now. It's no secret that this podcast, we strive to give our very best answers. We bring all of our knowledge, clinical training, background, all the things that we try to provide on D2C, we provide in short order here, but in very summarized fashion, not to the depth that we would like to, and frankly, 2 to 3 months after the fact when you ask it because of the demand.
Yeah.
Sign up and get help tomorrow. This week is open mic week on the program. What we do in open mic week is we just have our clients in Dare to Connect. It's literally a Q&A. Bring your questions. We're open books as can be. Today, we spent 45 minutes talking about, what was it, Mark?
It was a travel plan.
Traveling and recovery as an addict. What do I do? How do I handle it? We shared stories of how it's worked for us. We shared stories about how it has not worked for us. We went through all the stuff we teach clients in our individual sessions. You can have that tomorrow. Give it a try at daretoconnectnow.com. We'd love to have you see you there. And for those who are looking to continue to send in submissions to the podcast, we value and we thank you so much for being here. We like to keep this non-monetized. We just like bringing you help and we like giving back and we like connecting with all of you. You can send in those submissions at pbsepodcast.com. There's a contact form down at the bottom you can send your questions into.
Yeah, we're just a couple of months behind right now because we get so many questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, hey, thanks for being here with us again and listening to, you know, two guys rant about this stuff. We do love and appreciate all of you, and just it is a privilege and an honor to,
it is,
in some ways, be in the trenches with you, and just appreciate you. You know,
let us get more trenchy with you.
Yeah,
get more trenchy with us.
Yeah, come get more trenchy with us.
That's going to be our new marketing slogan. I'm going to put that on our website. Get trenchy with us.
All right, everybody. Hey, take care, and we will pick things back up on our next episode.
All right. Bye bye. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.